This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. This is our full hour of national politics with your phone calls and your emails. And we are joined today with our monthly visit from the political junkie, Ken Rudin. Ken, welcome back to Cincinnati Edition.
So much, Michael.
And we also have with us today University of Cincinnati Associate Professor of Political Science, Dr. David Niven. David, welcome back to our program.
It's my pleasure, Michael.
We know that you've got national politics on your mind. Anything on your mind, share it with us. Questions, comments, thoughts, 513-419-7100. That's also the number to call if you want to answer this month's Political Junkie trivia question. Ken, what is this month's question?
Well, I don't really know. Well, you know, Donald Trump is campaigning. He's coming to Ohio on Saturday to campaign for Max Miller, who's running for Congress against Anthony Gonzalez. He'll be in Wellington on Saturday, which reminds me, and I assume that Donald Trump is going to talk about once again that he's going to run for president once again in 2024. So the trivia question is, who was the last president born in Ohio who served two full terms?
The last president born in Ohio to serve two full terms. Ken, thank you for being mostly awake to offer that question to our listeners this month. I know they appreciate it. And if you've got the answer, give us a call at 513-419-7100. That's also the number to call to just share your thoughts on the issue of the day facing this country. You can also, for that issue, send us an email at talk@wvxu.org. If you want to answer the trivia question, though, we can only take that by phone. One more time, 513-419-7100, the last president born in Ohio to serve two full terms. Let's talk about a president from Delaware. We are about just over 5 months removed from the day that Joe Biden, a longtime fixture.
Born in Pennsylvania.
I was not even going to be incorrect. You made me sound incorrect before we even got going. Born in Pennsylvania, we know the story of Scranton, the scrappy guy from Scranton who moved on to Delaware, where he served as a senator for a very long time before being vice president. He's been in the national spotlight for ages and ages, but now he's president. And I thought we could just start this conversation with a look at 5 months of President Joe Biden. Ken, give us your assessment of this man in this role now.
Well, I mean, certainly he came into office with a myriad of problems, tons of problems, some because of Donald Trump, some irrespective of Donald Trump, and some things he's done really, really well. I think the fact that the vaccine program, that while he will not fulfill his hope of getting 75% of Americans vaccinated by July 4th, he has still gotten a tremendous amount of Americans vaccinated. I think, if anything, it's not Biden's fault that people are not getting vaccinated. It's ridiculous ideology. But besides that, I think he's done a good job with that, good job with getting money to the American people who had financial problems during the pandemic. But there are still problems that whoever is to be blamed for are going on right now, including a tremendous uptick in violent crime and including homicides.
We're also joined today by University of Cincinnati Associate Professor of Political Science, Dr. David Niven. David, Joe Biden is someone who faced questions about whether he could rise to the occasion in a country that was facing what has been characterized as a reckoning on racial justice last year. Could he respond to the economy, given what the pandemic had done to the United States? And many other questions based on his long history in office. So what are your thoughts about the way Joe Biden has navigated that as president?
Well, you're right. It's certainly unprecedented challenges facing this presidency, but also just an opportunity. I think really the defining characteristic of these months has been a return to normalcy, a return to a time when Americans didn't have to think about the president every single day and worry what he was up to. And I think more than even these you know, challenges of the pandemic and the economy and so forth, just simply returning, you know, our basic sense of how things work and our basic sense of order has been a defining accomplishment, and certainly something that he was exceptionally well prepared to do as somebody who has served in national office, as you noted, for decades and decades.
Again, that sense of normalcy is something that Joe Biden openly embraced. I mean, he launched his campaign by saying Donald Trump is not the right guy for this job. This is going to be a battle for the soul. It wasn't so much policy driven, at least in the early days of the Democratic primary, the way other Democratic candidates were trying to push strong liberal policies. Joe Biden was talking about the soul of this country. Is that something, I mean, what David just said, is that something that appears to matter in this country right now over the past 5 months? Do you get the sense that people are happy, that they aren't reading tweets every day, and that they aren't worried about what the president might say?
Well, some people will say that anything after the 45th president would be an improvement. But I agree with what David said. By the way, the famous return to normalcy, that also was a slogan of a former Ohio president, Warren Harding, by the way, just to point that out. But I agree with it. He did not run an ideological campaign. He wasn't, you know, the progressive hero and you know, like Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren. He was basically saying, look, I'm a good guy. I know Congress. I know government inside and out. I'm not going to embarrass you. I'm going to, you know, as he said when he was in Europe, America is back. And I think that Joe Biden was going to campaign and govern as somebody who's going to say America is back. If nothing, if for no other reason that it's back to normalcy, back to not tirades against the press, against women, against people with disabilities, against he wouldn't vilify his opponents. I think the comity and the decency is the biggest change in the last 6 months.
David, that America is back refrain is something President Biden was saying frequently during his recent trip to Europe for a summit there with world leaders, including Vladimir Putin. And before we get into the specifics of the conversation with Vladimir Putin and the U.S. relationship with Russia, do you get the sense that world leaders believe America is back?
You know, I think you have to. And I don't think it's anything more complicated than just looking at the images of the president meeting with world leaders versus the images that came out in the previous administration. You know, what you saw in those moments was respect and collegiality. You know, what you saw were, you know, human connections that are obviously the very point of those meetings, that you know, that something can be fostered merely by, you know, those human relationships. And what you saw in the previous 4 years, you know, you saw the glaring, the distance, you know, in some cases you saw, I mean, open skepticism and perhaps mocking in the eyes of some of these leaders. And so, you know, to say America is back has a certain credibility when, you know, the leaders of the world can sit down at a table and function again. And so, I do think, again, this notion that one of the things Joe Biden can accomplish as president is simply not concerning us, is simply not creating crises out of nothing, you know, there's something to be said for that.
And also, let me just add one thing. He didn't, when he was in Europe, he didn't vilify NATO. He didn't mock the individual leaders. Mm-hmm. I mean, last time, I mean, basically, if you think of what came out of Helsinki, I mean, he seemed like he had better, nicer things to say about Vladimir Putin than he did about our allies in Western Europe. So the difference was startling.
A deep contrast from his predecessor, Donald Trump, who had significant praise for some of the world's most notorious dictators and some hostile relationships with leaders of allied nations. Joe Biden in the U.S. Senate was a longtime member of the Foreign Relations Committee. He was vice president under President Barack Obama and led a lot of foreign policy initiatives in that role. What do you see is the difference between Biden and his predecessor outside of those personal relationships and perhaps the words used? How important is Biden's experience in the way he's navigating the challenges the world faces, Ken?
Well, you know something, that's a good question, because the Senate that Joe Biden served in for 36 years, I mean, he was elected in 72, he became president in 2009. I mean, the 36 years in the Senate, he forged alliances and relationships with Republicans as well as Democrats, liberals as well as conservatives. But this is a brand new Senate. This is not the Senate he served in. And this Senate basically is a Senate that is just split in two. That no matter, I mean, just for example, not to I mean, the voting rights bill is an example, not a perfect example, because the bill was not a perfect bill. But clearly, 50 Republicans are going to say no. 50 Democrats are going to say yes. That kind of and there was just a nomination that Vice President Harris had to break a tie for a confirmation. We didn't see that in the past. There were always differences. We saw the Senate split over civil rights and Vietnam and things like that, Supreme Court nominations. But this is split on almost everything. It seems like too many. It's just us against them. And I don't remember the Senate ever being this divided or the country being this divided.
We're going to talk more about the relationship between the Congress and the White House in just a moment. We are joined today by the political junkie Ken Rudin and University of Cincinnati Associate Professor of Political Science, Dr. David Niven. As you know, each month when we have the political junkie on, we have a trivia question. And I forgot to mention, Ken, what does the winner win?
They win a very valuable political junkie button.
Yes, they are very valuable. And we've got a bunch of people that want to offer an answer to this month's question, which is the last U.S. president born in Ohio to have served two terms. Let's try to get some answers now.
Two full terms.
Two full terms. Anne is on the line with an answer. Anne, what is your response?
I'm thinking that it's Taft.
Ken, is it Taft?
Well, no. William Howard Taft, elected in 1908. He tried to run again in 2012, and he did, but he was challenged by Teddy Roosevelt, his predecessor, and the split in the Republican Party not only elected Woodrow Wilson, but Taft finished in third place in 1912. So Taft only served one term.
And thank you so much for taking the time to guess. We appreciate it. We'll get another guess now from Julie. Hi, Julie. What's your guess?
Hi there. Well, mine's Grover Cleveland, but now I realize he wasn't born in Ohio.
Oh, so are you withdrawing your response, Julie?
Well, no, he served two terms, but is it someone from Ohio or someone born
It's someone Ohio? Born in Ohio, yes. And,
okay.
and I think Ken Grover Cleveland, was he from New York?
New Jersey?
No. Grover Cleveland was actually the city is in Ohio, but the president was not.
All right, Julie, thanks so much for the call and taking a shot at this month's question. And now
there's a lovely Grover Cleveland rest stop on the New Jersey Turnpike.
Yeah, I recommend it
highly.
That's right.
Born in New Jersey, but elected governor of New York. That's absolutely right.
Oh, how about that? So this rest stop you speak of, is it separated by someone else's rest stop and then you get the other half of it?
Well, you can go in and then you have to leave and then you come back again.
Grover Cleveland, of course, served two non-consecutive terms.
Yeah, where's that Benjamin Harrison rest stop that we're always talking about?
All right. Steven's on the line with a guess. Hi, Steven. What's your guess?
Hello, Michael.
Hi.
Ulysses Simpson Grant, 1876.
All right. Ken, was it U.S. Grant?
U.S. Grant is the correct answer.
Oh, how about that? The last president born in Ohio to serve two full terms as president. You have to go all the way to just past the Civil War to find Ulysses S. Grant. Stephen, great guess. You're correct. We're going to place you on hold. Our assistant producer, Nick Swartzel, is standing by. He's going to get some information from you, and we will be mailing off one of those coveted political junkie buttons. Congratulations to you, and thanks so much for calling. All right. So U.S. Grant, of course, has all kinds of local Ohio and Kentucky connections, Ken. We were talking about this via email that U.S. Grant's father, I think he was mayor of Georgetown over in Brown County. He spent some time in Bethel. He's buried in Spring Grove Cemetery. He was also postmaster in Covington in Kentucky across the river here, my hometown, where he was postmaster during the Civil War years of President Grant. So good question this
and
month,
not
Ken.
Only that, not only that, Grant actually sought a third, or considered seeking a third term. I can't remember if it was 1876 or 1880, but he wanted to go for a third term and he just was denied it at the convention.
How about that? Little history lesson as well. Let's get back to today's conversation. And if you've got questions, concerns, thoughts about the state of the nation, if you want to weigh in on the performance of President Joe Biden 5 months into his term as president, or anything else on your mind related to national politics, call us at 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org. Let's bring back UC Associate Professor of Political Science, Dr. David Niven. David, we heard references there from Ken just moments ago about this very partisan divide in the United States Senate. We saw some early success from the president on his agenda, even though the vice president had to be on standby in case a tie vote was needed. How long can we anticipate this kind of unprecedented 50-50 gridlock in the U.S. Senate on some of these major issues, whether it be voting rights legislation, transportation, and that sort of thing?
Well, it is an extraordinary moment. It fits the sort of larger extraordinary moment of the nation where, you know, it's not just that we're polarized as a nation or that the Congress is polarized where there's no overlap between Democrats and Republicans. It's not just that we're, you know, deeply divided. It's also that we're largely evenly divided, which really sets up this dynamic in the Congress. You know, I think the bottom line is there's very few things that the Democrats are in a position to peel off some Republican votes on. Obviously, infrastructure and things that, you know, sort of tangibly bring results and tangibly bring desired goods back to Republican states, there's some room. There's a few Republicans willing to sit down on that. But when there are questions about voting rights or anything that's really value-driven, there isn't a single Republican vote available.
Excuse me. Ken, we've been hearing a lot about the filibuster because of this, right? And we saw the voting rights legislation die on a 50-50 vote. We've seen votes take place where a majority may be in support of something, but it doesn't reach that 60-vote threshold and therefore loses. What do you make of this debate over whether the filibuster should be eliminated?
Well, I'm always nervous about those things. It's just like packing the Supreme Court. You know, if the Democrats say, well, we should have 13 justices on the Supreme Court, when the Republicans are in charge, they say, okay, we should have 20 justices on the Supreme Court. So when Harry Reid started in 2013 because of Republican obstructionism to weaken the filibuster, basically it allowed there were more chinks in the armor of the filibuster with Harry Reid. Mitch McConnell took it to an art form. He said, okay, you want to get rid of filibusters for federal court judges? Okay, let's get rid of them for cabinet officials. Let's get rid of them for Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court nominations. So it seems like whatever the Democrats try, the Republicans make them eat their words. So I don't know what it means, but here's the thing. There were a lot of things wrong with the voting rights bill. I mean, there are some things that the Republican legislatures are, and especially in the South, are doing to block voting rights that is just reprehensible. But this bill, this famous For the People Act that the Democrats were pushing, they had things like federal funding of congressional elections. They had things of ending gerrymandering. We may be for that, but that has nothing to do with the issue of fair elections, or at least blocking what the Republicans are doing. So Republicans would never vote for that. And even Joe Manchin said that's not right. So Joe Manchin has come up with a compromise. He said, let's get rid of the public financing. And yes, let's have a voter ID, which Democrats have been, you know, wary about, rightly so, because it's affected black and brown people. But let's get rid of the vote. Let's have the voter ID and let's get rid of federal funding. So that was a great compromise. Republicans are saying, no, we don't want that either. So if the Republicans are not going to go for anything, any kind of reform of what's going on, the way elections are held, then the filibuster, the ending of the filibuster, has to come into play. And Democrats have to decide whether to get rid of the filibuster, and then they can implement much of Joe Biden's agenda. But if they get rid of the filibuster, then the Republicans come into office. Let's say the Republicans take over the Senate next year and the House, which is very, very possible. And let's just say they win the presidency in 2024, which is possible as well. Then the Democrats have no say if there's no filibuster. So you just have to realize that, yes, in the short run, it could help the Democratic Party. It could help Joe Biden. But you really want to go that far. And that's why Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema and other moderate Democrats are very nervous about making that change.
But the reality is, give the Republicans the precedent or not, the filibuster is going to fall if it serves Mitch McConnell's purposes,
true,
you know, in 2 years. So, you know, I grant the point that in a certain sense, you know, you're playing with fire anytime you alter a rule. It can be used against you in the future. But the bottom line reality is it's going to be used against Democrats in the future, regardless of whether they alter the rules. I mean, it didn't take a precedent to stop Merrick Garland, and it didn't take a precedent to do a 180 and advance Justice Barrett. The Republicans simply did it. So, you know, I think the tension here is between respect for a tradition and an acknowledgement that the institution that tradition served isn't the same anymore and can't be governed the same way.
And David, you know, you're absolutely right. And here's the thing that really hits me, and it hits a lot of Democrats too, that the Republicans are willing to change tradition without a second thought. Democrats seem so tied up in guilt and and like worry about what history would say about us.
We're going to talk more about what's going on in the country, including House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's effort to create a select committee to investigate the January 6th insurrection by supporters of former President Trump, as well as Vice President Kamala Harris's plans to visit the U.S.-Mexico border, as we continue with your phone calls as well next, and the political junkie Ken Rudin on Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We've got our full hour of national politics and your phone calls and your emails. We're joined today by the political junkie Ken Rudin and University of Cincinnati Associate Professor of Political Science, Dr. David Niven. Join us at 513-419-7100. We'll go to the phone lines now where we find Bob. Hi, Bob. What is your question or comment? Do we have Bob on the line?
It appears.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Go ahead and start over, Bob. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. At this point, it appears that we may never know what was discussed between Trump and Putin in Helsinki, Finland. However, one thing is clear. Donald Trump did not make a move on anything, it appears, until he cleared it with Putin. So he has been under Putin's thumb, and at this point, because of that damage that was done, it appears that's still the case. The Republican Party, that part of it that is following Donald Trump, they still appear to be under Putin's thumb.
Bob,
what is frightening to me, yes.
Just go ahead and finish your thought.
Okay, what is frightening to me is that our country is being torn apart by one who has claimed other people to be communists, where it appears very clearly that Donald Trump, following Putin's lead, is a communist himself.
All right. Bob, we appreciate the phone call and you taking the time to share your thoughts with us. And you can join our conversation at 513-419-7100. I want to go back to January 6th, Ken, when we saw the shocking scene at the U.S. Capitol, an insurrection unfolding here in this country, Trump supporters trying to overthrow a Democratic election after their candidate was defeated at the polls. And we saw some solidarity, some bipartisan solidarity from the elected officials who were trapped inside the Capitol during that chaos. But there was not agreement on how to move forward with the commission to evaluate what happened that day, what went wrong, and what might be deployed to prevent that in the future. It looks like Speaker Pelosi is going it alone now. Give us your thoughts.
Well, you're absolutely right. Remember, at the time, in the immediate aftermath of January 6th, People like Kevin McCarthy went on the House floor and said, look, Donald Trump was responsible. Let me just say one thing about what Bob said a few minutes ago. I don't think Trump is a communist, but I do think Trump has a real interest in destroying and dismantling democracy, and especially in this country. And that's what he has in common with Putin. They both have contempt with democracy and fair elections. And that's what we saw after January 6th, because when the Republicans had a chance to vote on a bipartisan commission to investigate what happened on January 6th, the Republicans blocked it. They filibustered it, speaking of filibusters. So Nancy Pelosi basically has no other choice other than to form a select committee, because otherwise the truth will never get out. And again, of course, Republicans will say, oh, this is a partisan committee. Well, they had a chance for a bipartisan committee, and they didn't want it. Basically, anything that's going to hurt the Republican Party, that's going to hurt Donald Trump in 2022, the Republicans are against. And that's why they're blocking the commission.
David, I'm curious of your thoughts on that as well, because we did see that bipartisan solidarity for the most part back on January 6th when the Senate reconvened and we saw the House, and we saw members of both houses express disdain for what had happened, concern for the country after what happened. But very quickly, it seemed that Republicans got back in line behind President Trump, except for, of course, Liz Cheney, who got in trouble and kicked out of, Liz Cheney.
Liz Cheney probably is in the same side.
She is probably supportive of her daughter, yes. Liz Cheney, who was booted from GOP leadership in the House for continuing to speak against the former president. What is happening?
Well, you know, I think there's the old saying, there are no atheists in a foxhole. You know, there are no insurrection deniers when the weapons are pointed at you. But, you know, give Republicans in the House, you know, a few days time to reflect, and they come to realize it was just tourists walking through the building, and they pose no actual harm. I think what we've seen in January 6th is really one of the most frightening elements of Republican leadership and Republican thought in the Congress right now, which is the fact that there are no limits. There, for several members, there are no points in which, you know, truth matters to them. There are no points in which, you know, the larger good matters to them. There are no points where democracy must be defended. There's just a new opportunity to spin. And, you know, we talk about political spin, and you know, there's lots of opportunities for folks to take different vantage points and offer their ideas with a different particular perspective. But when democracy is on the line, when freedom is on the line, we'd like to think we could rise above that. And it's really frightening. And what you saw, you know, you saw moments on January 6th where some members were kind of shocked and their conscience was shocked, and they came to see, we better quit this. You know, the what's the harm question about giving in to Trump for a little while came into stark relief. But as that fades, you know, we really get at fundamental questions about, you know, belief in a system. We really get at fundamental questions about right and wrong. And the fact that we can't even get through this modern Congress a nonpartisan investigative commission to seek their own safety. Because this, you know, this is, people don't riot and attack once and then say, that was good, but we'll never do that again. This is about even their own future.
513-419-7100 is the number to call to join our conversation. Alex is on the line. Hi, Alex. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, my comment is that I heard bits and pieces of Joe Biden's speech, and he was talking about how he's going to attack women's nation,
Alex, I don't mean to interrupt you, but we're having a hard time understanding, and I'm wondering that's better.
Is that any better?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, great. Yeah, I heard part of Joe Biden's speech, and he was talking about using nuclear weapons and F-16s and F-23s and against the people if they felt moved to attack again, if you want to consider that an attack. On January 6th, I was there, and that was not the sense that I felt. I believe there was testimony also that FBI agents were involved in that attack, and also people are still being held in solitary confinement that we're sightseeing in the Capitol. I mean, I've watched a lot of video of people walking around with their phones up, and it was definitely attacked.
Alex, you were at the Capitol on January the 6th?
Yes. Yes.
What took you there?
Well, I wanted to believe, and I still do believe, and I will believe, in the Republic. And the Republic is by, of, and for the people. And the Republic is what it is, and that is the privilege to have certain rights. And one of the rights is right to assemble, and a lot of other rights. And some of the things that were happening on that day, I saw from the videos later on in the next month, continuing, that it was not an attack with guns and killing, but actually it was a demonstration that got out of hand. And I think some of the out-of-hand people probably were some of the same people that were in Seattle and that were in Portland that just were there to make a mess of things.
So your suggestion is that it wasn't Trump supporters who broke into the Capitol, destroyed parts of it, and forced the government to flee. It was leftists, right, and the FBI?
Not as much as the media would let it.
All right, Alex. Well, we do appreciate you taking the time to call in and share your thoughts with us. Gentlemen, that is a message that does get shared. It does not match reality, but it is what Alex believes, someone who claims to have been there and referred to the insurrection as a sightseeing. Ken, your thoughts on that call?
Well, you know something, this is what I love about public radio, and I am very serious. No, and I'm very serious and sincere about this. As I was listening to Alex, I was like saying, oh my God, do you really, really believe this? This is freedom assembly, this was just a demonstration. Not that they were saying, hang Mike Pence or hang Nancy Pelosi. It was just a demonstration. So I'm saying, but then I'm thinking, thank you for letting him on the air and to talk as long as he was, because this is a large percentage of the American people, certainly of the Republican Party, who truly believe this, who truly believe this was part of democracy, the right to smash into the Capitol. Sure, they didn't have guns, but look at the weapons they used. They used shields. I saw videos of policemen almost strangled by them putting stuff on their necks and trying to smother them. It was abhorrent. It was so anti-democratic. But again, I thank you for playing his tape, because too much of the Republican Party believes this, and I don't know how that changes. I don't know if an election is going to change it, because if anything, I think because of redistricting and other things, Republicans are going to probably do better in 2022 than they did in 2020. So I fear for this country. I fear for the future of democracy. But at the same time, it was instructive to hear what this guy had to say.
We know that it's not just people like Alex who attended this and are mischaracterizing it now as some sort of sightseeing tour and not the violent insurrection that it was, and that has led to so many charges against individuals. Senator Ron Johnson, for example, has referred to this as a peaceful protest. David, I want you to share your thoughts too, if you would.
Well, I do think it's extraordinary, you know, the disconnection from reality, and it certainly spans, from, you know, citizens all the way through to elected officials. And, you know, the difficulty, you know, it would be one thing to have different opinions, and it would be one thing to have shades of different opinions. But, you know, it's impossible to have a logical discussion with someone whose fundamental positions are built around denying, you know, basic reality. You know, it's impossible for the discourse to, you know, to move forward. You know, we can't sit down and have a civil conversation about what the, you know, proper marginal tax rates should be when one side fundamentally believes up is down, and you know, it's very difficult to move forward from that. And so, you know, you hope sober leaders could bring their followers around, but of course, you know, a lot of leaders in the Republican Party are perpetuating this, are making these kinds of outlandish claims and feeding them. And you know, it really is, you know, for somebody who teaches political science and tries to, you know, tries to build classes around, you know, around discussions of, you know, great American questions. I mean, it really does devolve to this is the question. This is the defining question. Can we, you know, can we move forward with a political conversation that's rooted in basic reality?
Ken, it was not my intention to spend so much time today talking about the insurrection again, but since we're there and we're analyzing the Republican Party's current relationship to it, I mean, it was just earlier this month that Vice President Mike Pence, who was caught up in this, who was at the Capitol and was rushed off to be protected during it, who simply says that it was a dark day in the history of the United States, which a lot of people agree with, most people probably agree with, but says that he and former President Trump might never, quote, see eye to eye on that, and then went on to say that the Democrats are using the insurrection to divide the country and distract Americans from the Biden administration's agenda. That's according to a report I pulled up from Politico.
Well, look, if you're a Republican running for president or hoping to run for president in 2024, as any former vice president other than Dick Cheney would do, and if they believe that Donald Trump is not going to run, I personally can't imagine Donald Trump running again. And I think that's why a lot of Republicans would never, ever say anything untoward towards Donald Trump, because, you know, he can't get on Twitter anymore, but he'll have these rallies and he'll savage fellow Republicans. That's what he's doing on Saturday in Ohio. He's out to savage Anthony Gonzalez, the congressman from Northeast Ohio, because he was one of the 10 Republicans who had the temerity to vote to impeach. So they're all, you know, shaking in their boots at the thought of what Donald Trump could do to them. And that's why the Liz Cheney's of the world, the Anthony Gonzalez's of the world, the few Republicans who stand up, they are few and far between, and very few of them are currently in office, because they know that you stand up and criticize Donald Trump, you have a very short political future.
We got an email from Anne about the filibuster, who says, quote, I used to think that ending the filibuster was a bad idea. The majority should have to compromise with the minority to get things done. Seems like a good idea, but that doesn't take into account Mitch McConnell and other Republicans' total willingness to choose doing nothing to the detriment of the country rather than compromise with a Democrat and becoming just a party of obstructionists. She goes on to write, and to a lesser degree, the Dems have started digging in almost as hard on certain issues. We got an email from Kevin in Mason, who says, if I were a member of Antifa and were being accused of a thing, I would encourage a full investigation of the facts in order to clear my name. So tell me exactly, why are Republicans so afraid of finding out who was behind the January 6th insurrection? And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monk. We're wrapping up our full hour of national politics with the political junkie Ken Rudin and UC Associate Professor of Political Science, Dr. David Niven. We're going to get right back to the phones right now, and we'll try to go as quickly as we can to get as many of you in as possible to share your thoughts quickly. Let's go now to the phones, where we find Jed. Hi, Jed. What's your question or comment?
I would just like to comment upon the fact that I'm not hearing from what I would like to think are mature adults, any kind of non-binary type of dialogue. It seems to be either this or that. You're either living in a reality, I'm living in a fantasy, I've seen the real thing, you're just in some delusional state of hope and altruism. And it's like, the facts are facts, folks. And yeah, videos are very revealing. You know, and things, it's like that thing of saying, I'm just really kind of disappointed with the conversations are being held these days, because it doesn't seem to really get anywhere. It's just a lot of kind of blaming. And and I'm hearing that I like to bounce it back and forth between WNPR, or, you know, your station, the NPR stations, and more of the right-wing stations, and both sides are just such it's a sad state, because it's really kind of echo chambers and there's no good dialogue.
Well,
and
Jed,
it seems as though the people are suffering as a result.
Well, we're glad that you shared your thoughts with us here at WVXU. Your thoughts are always welcome, and thanks for listening in today. And hope you'll listen again and give us a call to share your thoughts on how to improve. We appreciate that. Back to the phone lines now, where we find Jackie. Hi, Jackie. What's your question or comment?
Hi. Good. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Good segue there. I was. My comment was, you know, with the depolarization and the alternate realities that we're functioning under, I get concerned. I'm a college financial aid counselor with the everyday bread and butter issues that get overlooked because of all the chaos. And I see students struggle to figure out how they're going to pay for college. And it doesn't feel like the narrative is on these issues that really affect people. And how are we ever going to get back to a time when these issues take precedent over the, you know, the noise created by the last 4 years of Donald Trump?
Great question, Jackie. I wish there were an immediate answer for such a thing, but we try on this program to go deep into issues, particularly on the local level, as best we can. And thank you so much for raising your concern with us. We appreciate you taking the time to call in, Jackie. Let's go now to Tim. Hi, Tim. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, this is more a comment, or I would ask your guest to comment on this. 6 years old, and I've come to believe that Donald Trump has been the single most influential politician in my lifetime. Now, that comes certainly not, I'm using the word influential in terms of his effect on the body politic and on political discourse and parties. I used to believe it was Ronald Reagan who had brought the Republican Party considerably to the right, sort of leaving behind the liberal consensus Republicans, Eisenhower, Nixon, in the dust. And with that move to the right, he had brought the Democratic Party further along to the right as they tried to keep pace with a country that was moving to a more conservative bent. But I've come to believe more recently that Donald Trump has had greater influence on our political system than anyone in my 66, almost 67 years on this planet. And I ask your guest to comment on that.
Tim, we're going to get to your comment momentarily. I'm going to take one more call ahead of going back to our panel, and we're going to address the questions that have been raised by those of you here on this end of the line. Appreciate you sharing your thoughts with us. Thanks so much. And let's get one more caller in. Now we've got Jeff. Hi, Jeff. What's your question or comment?
Hi, this is Jeff. I'm a Cincinnati person, 28 years old, and I'm a Jew. And I have to say, I keep seeing like conservative Christian politics are like taking over my country, I feel like, which sounds crazy, but it's like from anything from abortion rights to the way that we approach international relations, there's this sort of like perverse duality in both the Democratic and Republican Party that like really, I think, takes this like conservative Christian bend on how our sort of society needs to look. And lately, and I know it's not new, but really in the last few months, you know, I feel like I've seen it really start to creep in, and, you know, certainly got some help with the Supreme Court makeup right now. But it's really concerning. I feel like my values are not necessarily being reflected. And, you know, even when I vote for someone who I feel like, you know, follows my sort of more liberal ideology, they then, you know, come out and they're not going to be, you know, fighting for my girlfriend's right to an abortion if she wants one in the same way that I want them to. And so it's just like, how do we get out of this sort of like we have a separation between church and state, and yet one theology very much dictates our national politics?
Jeff, thank you so much for the call and sharing your thoughts with us as well. Again, we're joined by the political junkie, Ken Rudin, and UC Associate Professor of Political Science, Dr. David Niven. Let's break down some of those comments we got from the callers. We've only got a few minutes left, so we'll have to move rather quickly. First was Jed, who says he goes back and forth between the NPR station, us here at WVXU, and some of the right-wing stations. His words here in town, and there's certainly more of those than us here in this community, and wondering why we don't have more, I guess he said, non-binary conversations. Ken, you're in a lot of media outlets around the country. What is your answer to Jed?
conversations we could have, I'm not blaming anybody for this, but we could have talked today about the migration at the border. And there's pluses and minuses about what the Biden administration is doing. When Joe Biden had that major address yesterday about crime, there was a big debate in the Democratic Party of how to deal with police, whereas the crime, the homicide rates are exploding. So I know there are a lot of things that are portrayed as black and white or black or white, but there are a lot of stuff in the middle that needs and deserves conversation. We didn't get to it this week, but believe me, public radio has been talking about that all for the entire Biden presidency.
I would agree with that, Ken, and it was on our agenda to talk about the shift to the presidency to focus more on violent crime and the vice president's trip to the border. We got a lot more calls than I had anticipated there in the last minute. I do like to accommodate our listeners' voices in the program. I'm sorry we didn't get to flesh those out. Let's talk about what Jackie, similar comment about the polarization. You know, is there too much of a focus, David, on the differences than getting into the meat of the issues?
Well, I think on this question, what Jackie had to say, this is really President Biden's strong suit. You know, he does not get caught in the muck and the mire and the name calling. And even in the international summit, you saw him refuse to characterize Putin. There was none of this, I looked into his soul nonsense talk. It was very factual and, you know, about what he wanted to accomplish. And just while we've been on the air, the president announced that there's a deal on the infrastructure plan with Senate Republicans and that the bill will be moving forward. So I think the president spends a far, far, far greater amount of his focus on the nuts and bolts things that Jackie is worried about. And I think, frankly, thinks that he can't spend his time worrying about, the conspiracy theories and the name calling, because that would prevent, you know, the things that he can accomplish from being done.
And lastly, Ken, Tim called and says that he used to believe Ronald Reagan was the most influential politician of his lifetime. He now believes it's Donald Trump. Is he right?
Well, I think in some ways he is, because I think, first of all, not only has Trump united the Republican Party behind him. For example, think of Ronald Reagan and the Robert Bork nomination, and so many Republicans voted against Bork. Republicans are not going to do anything that Donald Trump doesn't like. But he's also united the Democratic Party, because I think one of the reasons Joe Biden won is not so much they love Joe Biden, but they despise Donald Trump. They despise everything he stood for. And Joe Biden stood for a certain kind of decency that we didn't have for 4 years. And I think that was probably a major reason why he was elected.
That's Ken Rudin, the political junkie. And we've also been joined by UC Associate Professor of Political Science, Dr. David Niven. I think one thing we can all agree on is that it appears the cicadas are gone. Ken, last month when we had you on, you had some incredible home recorded noise from your...
Yes.
From your sprawling estate there on the East Coast, and it was quite noisy. Has it quieted down?
It's completely quieted down. I heard they're coming back for the 2024 primaries.
I think a lot of people will be coming back for the 2024 primaries, and we will have you along for the ride to talk about, and appreciate all the calls that came in today as well. Ken Rudin, David Niven, thanks to both of you for spending the hour with us. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks, guys.
My pleasure.
And if you're missing the cicadas, it's my task to remind you that you can still listen to the WVXU Brood 10 podcast about cicadas with Dr. Gene Kritsky, the big-time national expert based here in Cincinnati on cicadas. He talks to our Corey Sharber this week. Episode 9 of 10, the penultimate episode, dropped. You can listen to that at WVXU.org. Only one more episode to go, and that will be released next Tuesday. All your questions about Brood 10 still there for those of you still lingering and fascinated by those bugs. And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Our assistant producer is Nick Swartzel. Our technical director is Josh Elstrow. This theme music was composed by Rob Fetters. Find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks. We'll talk again tomorrow.